Never eat at any place called Mom's.
The sickness was shocking him, bringing Ryan to his knees in the mud, a thread of bile hanging from his mouth, all the way into the sodden dirt. He remembered now that that had been a part of one of the trader's sayings. Never play cards with a man called Doc was another part of it. And there had been a third part, but it had slipped from Ryan's memory. Then his mind backtracked to the second axiom. Doc! Ryan suddenly remembered his original worry about the old man, his son, and Jack. He spun on his heel, still holding the Sig Sauer, and set off back toward their cabin. It seemed that the storm was beginning to move away, toward the Pacific coast, across the next range of mountains. There was a noticeable gap between the flashes of chem lightning and the roiling sound of the thunder, and the rain was easing as the cold blue norther veered easterly. Everything was still quiet as Ryan reached the shelter of the overhanging cabin roof, pausing and sniffing, wishing he carried a kerchief. He reached out and checked the big sec-lock on the door with his left hand, finding to his relief that it was still securely fastened. If he couldn't get in, then Ryan was comforted by the thought that nobody else would. Even if they had a key, he could tell from the pressure that there were heavy bolts inside, at the top and the bottom of the door. It had to be well past the 10 minutes since he left the main building. By now, Christy would have roused JB and Mildred, and they would all be dressed and coming out to look for him. Ryan started to turn away when there was a dazzling flash of lightning that brought the door and the area on both sides of it into stark relief. Ryan noticed something very peculiar. The one side was a narrow strip of timbering, the rough ends of the logs overlapping each other. On the other side, the strip was wider, almost the width of the door, and the timbers ended in a straight, clean edge. If it hadn't been for the incredibly bright lightning, he would never have noticed it. Ryan waited, totally still and silent, until the next jagged flash burst around him. In that moment, he peered closely at the odd architectural feature and saw something else that he would never otherwise have noticed. The planking held the faint but unmistakable mark of a damp handprint, as though someone had recently pushed at the wood. Ryan waited again for a few seconds, using the next chem lightning flash to place his own hand precisely in the center of the mark, seeing how much smaller it was than his own spread fingers, and then he pushed very gently. It was a cunningly concealed door, matching up to the real locked and bolted portal, and it swung inward as though greased and counterbalanced. Ryan felt his short hairs prickling at the nape of his neck, thinking again about the excellent supper that he'd just puked up, and the tangle of raw heads and bloody bones hidden out in the forest. But his son and friends were in mortal peril. Razor-sharp combat reflexes had kept Ryan Cotter alive through long years of hardship and danger, and it was combat reflexes that were at play now. He was already deeply suspicious of the dark entrance to the log cabin. The open door and the rain-smeared handprint warned him of imminent potential danger. Finger tight on the trigger, he stepped inside the cabin. Mrs. Fairchild was waiting in the blackness, and she jumped at him, swinging at the side of his skull with a heavy hatchet that glittered in the flare of the next lightning strike. Ryan lifted the powerful pistol and used it to parry the murderous attack with the axe, blocking the singing edge in a shower of sparks, feeling the lethal impact. The force knocked Ryan 3 paces backward, staggering off balance.
Shit-sucking bastard!
The woman's breath, rancid in Ryan's face, was like the unwashed floor of a charnel house, and she wielded the whirling crescent of steel with a hideous skill, so fast and so furious that it gave Ryan no chance to do anything but defend, unable to bring the Sig Sauer into use. Mrs. Fairchild was in a state of murderous frenzy, forcing him back through the false doorway, off the porch, out into the easing rain, the water dancing off the blade of the hatchet, pattering into Ryan's face.
I will fucking kill you!
Ryan tried twice to close with her, to use his extra strength and height, but she was too fast, supernaturally swift. He managed to snatch only one shot, taking advantage of a moment when Mom seemed to hesitate, pausing to draw a ragged breath. But his footing was unsure in the thick mud, and the bullet went inches wide.
Fireballs!
escape. Ryan took a quick step to his left, hoping to snatch a nanosecond that would enable him to take another shot at Mom Fairchild. But some of the planks of the porch were rotten and cracked under his heel, sending him toppling away to his right.
God damn it!
The woman saw him suddenly vulnerable and swung down with her axe, sending the Sig Sauer spinning from Ryan's wet fingers, the blaster landing in a deep puddle a dozen feet away. The hatchet looped up behind her shoulder, ready for the final lethal stroke.
Goodbye, you shit for brains, dickhead!
Ryan lifted his right hand to try to parry the blow, realizing the futility of the gesture. His mind's eye projected forward, seeing the steel hack clean through his wrist, leaving a blood-jetting stump, when he saw an amazing sight. Something like a long needle of steel smeared with blood, glistening in the lightning's fierce dazzle, had emerged from the center of Mom's chest, below her pendulous breasts, tearing a small, neat fold in the check shirt she wore. She took a single, faltering step toward Ryan. Her fingers unclenched the murderous grip on the haft of the axe, allowing it to drop to the boards at her feet. Ryan watched in fascination, seeing the rapier's point withdrawn, and then thrust in again from behind, penetrating between the ribs, beneath the shoulder blade on the left side of the woman's corpulent body, slicing into lungs and heart. Mrs. Fairchild lurched to the left momentarily, revealing the figure of Doc behind her. Mrs. Fairchild's little piggy eyes had opened unnaturally wide with the shock of the attack from behind her. Her mouth opened in a great wordless cry when she dropped face down into the liquid dirt. Ryan managed to free his trapped boot from the splintered wood and stepped neatly to one side, looking for his blaster, which was barely visible in the pitted pool of muddied water. He picked it up, his eye on Mrs. Fairchild. Doc stooped and wiped the blood-slick steel of his beloved Toledo rapier on the corpse's shirt.
It was ever thus. Cast your bread upon the waters, and you see what you get.
Yeah, you get soggy bread.
Mildred, J.B., and Christy had arrived and were standing behind Ryan, all three with blasters drawn. Dean and J.B. appeared behind Doc.
You all right, lover?
Yeah, Dad. Thought you were down and done for.
Ryan examined the chipped and scarred metal of his Sig Sauer.
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. And a big thanks to you, Doc. I owe you one.
Doc smiled and returned the slender engraved steel blade to its ebony sheath.
And I owe you hundreds, my dear friend.
Mind explaining just what's been going on here, bro?
Ryan stepped past Mrs. Fairchild's body and showed everyone the concealed doorway. By now, Jack had appeared, shaking his head sleepily.
Think I'm a bit drugged.
I would not be a jot or tittle surprised, dear lad. I confess to feeling a little doped myself. Perhaps I should say that I felt a little more doped than is my usual condition. All part of the murderous plan of that red-eyed trollop. But I must admit to utter bewilderment as to what lay behind this scheme. Ryan, what was the ultimate aim of this wicked woman?
You three would have simply disappeared. No way of knowing how or why. Could be she aimed to blame the muty rats. I chilled another of them out yonder.
I'm as puzzled as Doc, lover. What's the point of chilling Dean, Doc, and Jack? Just what would she have gained by it?
Meat.
How's that?
Fresh meat.
What for?
For her famous jerky.
The storm had moved right away, and the rain had stopped. The clearing was startlingly silent, the six companions staring at Ryan, understanding slowly dawning on each horrified face. Doc swallowed hard. He turned away and leaned one hand on the rain-damp wall of the cabin. In the moonlight, his normally ruddy cheeks had assumed the hue of old parchment.
Dad, I can't...
Excuse me.
Jack nodded to the companions, then walked back inside the dark cabin.
Well, Jack's handling it well.
I think not.
Ugh, sweet Christ on the cross, how can anyone be so wicked?
At least we leave things a bit cleaner.
J.B. reached out and squeezed Mildred's fingers so hard, his knuckles whitened. moving closer to hug her to him. Rain streaked his glasses, making it hard to see his eyes. Christy had gone pale, her cheeks like ivory.
The jerky was... Oh, Gaia! Ah!
Ryan quickly recapped for them in a few quiet words his discovery of the slaughter dump of corpses along the rear trail.
So I guess we won't stay here too much longer. Mom might have some friends. Someone supplied her with the stuff for her jerky. Might even be a colleague of the Children of the Rock. I just don't know.
Still some time to first light. I reckon it might be a real good thing to go through the place. See if we can find any clean, uncontaminated food. Then before we set out tomorrow, we drag her inside and torch the place. Cover our tracks. Fire purges.
Sure. Sounds like a plan.
They did a thorough search for food. Though none of them felt that hungry, Ryan insisted that they should all try to force down a reasonable breakfast before hitting the road. There were plenty of eggs in the kitchen of the restaurant, as well as a larder with shelves full of sausages and home-cured bacon. None of them had opted for any of the meat products, limiting themselves to omelets and scrambled eggs. Christy also whipped up a plateful of buttered biscuits that vanished quickly enough. Now the first bright light of morning was breaking away to the east, dappling the slopes of the Sierras with a pale golden sheen. The smell of kerosene lingered in the dawn air, like iron on the tongue. Through the open door of Mom's place, Ryan could see the feet and ankles of the owner of the eatery, lying by the bar where she'd been dumped. Jack was holding a self-light, waiting for the word to set it off.
Everyone clear and ready?
They were all packed and eager to move away from the nightmare place. Ryan glanced around, taking a deep breath of the clean mountain air, trying to set aside the memory of what they'd all eaten the night before.
Right, Jack?
Yep.
Set the fire.
The self-light spluttered, its flame tiny and feeble in the dawn sunlight. Jack cradled it in his hands against the fresh breeze, stooped just inside the door of the eatery, and applied it to a mess of crumpled paper, which flared up, a cloud of dirty gray smoke curling out into the clearing. In moments, the kerosene-soaked wood caught, and the smoke thickened and became black. Jack backed off, dropping the self-light in the damp dirt by his feet, watching fascinated as the red-orange flame spread quickly up the rough timber walls, setting the stained plasterboard ceiling on fire.
Like I said, cleansing. Shall we hit the trail?
Ryan paused as they crossed a narrow ridge, looking back down the valley toward Mom's place. He saw that the column of smoke, shredded by the northerly wind, was already growing thinner, the building beneath it almost totally consumed by the raging flames. He turned to Christy.
It'll be finished in a few minutes.
You think our story will prove adequate for the Children of the Rock?
Doc's cheeks were flushed, his blue eyes watering, his nose constantly running. Ryan nodded, talking over his shoulder.
Sure. Best kind of lie is the simple one.
Mom was having trouble with her stove and said it was overheating, but everything was fine when we left.
They began walking again, the armorer slinging his Uzi across his right shoulder.
Shouldn't we be reaching the ville soon?
From what those young guys said, there'll be sentries. They can't be far. Reckon they'll probably see us before we see them.
Within 10 minutes, they encountered another neatly printed sign.
Pilgrims and seekers after truth are nearly at the Golden City. Come in peace or not at all. That's us.
Doc was doubled over, racked, a thread of greenish spittle dangling from his chin. Ryan caught Mildred's eye, but she only shook her head and shrugged. JB had taken off his fedora, using it to fan away a cloud of persistent small black flies that hung around him.
How come they only pick on me, dark-nighted little bastards?
He brushed at his chest, then paused and stared carefully at the rad counter pinned to his lapel.
It's well into the orange. Must be a local hotspot, someplace fairly close.
Got the same reading on mine. Close to red, imminent danger. Shouldn't hang around here too long. Best keep a careful eye on the readings. Real careful.
They saw a small herd of flecked deer bounding across the trail a little way ahead of them, moving fast and elegant, down the hill toward the west. Ryan automatically unslung the Steyr rifle, picking up the head of a young stag in the laser image enhancer But he eased his finger off the trigger as he changed his mind about opening fire. In any case, they didn't need food. The track had widened, showing clear evidence of heavier use, hoof marks and furrowed wag wheels, the muddied scars filled with water. Just as Ryan stopped, the others gathering around him, a gun fired from the cover of the trees to the right of the old blacktop. The bullet gouged up a gout of spray that splashed over Ryan's pants and boots, missing him by less than a yard. Someone, well hidden in the shadowed pines, addressed them.
Wrong move buys you eternity, outlanders.
Keep very still.
You got a lot of blasters there.
There didn't seem to be any question, so Ryan chose not to answer. He looked up the hill toward the sound of the voice, trying to detect some sign of movement. But the dense wall of pines was impenetrable.
You triple stoop, stranger?
You got us cold, brother. Not the sort of charitable welcome we were led to expect from the Children of the Rock, though.
Who told you about us?
Don't know their names. There was three of them, eating supper last night at a small place run by a lady called Mom. Made the finest jerky I ever tasted.
JB held the Uzi at his hip, finger on the trigger. Ryan noticed that the blaster was set on full auto, ready for a lethal burst of fire.
You letting us in, or should we keep on walking?
Keep your dick in your pocket, mister! No need for rushing things!
You said about you'd been at Mom's place, stranger?
Ryan was disappointed to hear a second voice. They weren't dealing with just one man. No telling how many were in hiding.
Sure have.
Was things snug when you left?
Snug? I don't follow you.
You seen signs of fire. Big column of smoke. Seemed to come from roundabouts where Mom has her place. You didn't see nothing at all?
Don't look back that much. Just forward. But since you seem concerned, I'm looking back now and I don't make out any fire. The place did all right when we left. Had us an early breakfast and left around dawn.
We got a patrol heading out that way later on this morning to check it out.
There was a tension and a suspicion in the air. It was unmistakable, lying on the tongue, bitter and cold. But that wasn't so unusual in Frontier Pestholevilles. Ryan didn't feel any serious imminent threat, yet.
There any more in your party, mister?
No. What you see is what there is.
You aiming to visit or stay?
Who knows? My old father used to say that you had to walk that lonely valley by yourself.
This comment elicited whispered, unintelligible conversation from among the trees. JB shuffled a few paces to his left, coming closer to Ryan.
Think they're gonna let us in, Ryan? Sounds like they run a tight vill.
Not a bad thing. They sound like bottom-line sec men, guys who think with their blasters.
We know about the brothers you saw yesterday. They filed a report with us last night on a half dozen outlanders at Mom's place. Said you might be along here this morning.
Good.
They also said to watch you. Wondered if you was mercies on the hunt or bounties.
Not these days. Just traders who've had some hard times. Lost our rig. Been traveling across Deathlands here and there, picking up what we can. We'd appreciate being able to stay a few days with you.
What you got to offer? Trade them blasters for some food and beds?
Not the blasters, but we can trade some of our time. We heard you had trouble with some Apaches. This is a long way off their hunting lands.
Mescalero! Been trouble for a while to the children. Brother Joshua's named them as wolf's heads. Means we can chill them when and where we see them. It's a real bitter mortal feud. You run in with them?
Ryan considered telling the unseen guards about their bloody confrontation with the Apaches, but decided that one of the trader's maxims was more appropriate. Tell what you have to, and not a word more.
No, heard of them. We lend a hand in exchange for bed and board.
Have to put it to Brother Joshua. He's the voice of the Grail up here.
Grail?
Grail, holy. Reference to the drinking cup of Christ, as used at the alleged Last Supper. Then utilized by a legendary figure of Joseph of Arimathea to catch the drops of the Savior's blood after crucifixion. Taken allegedly to England, and has strong links with King Arthur, mythical ruler of part of Britain during the Dark Ages. A very potent symbol of religious power.
The long explanation brought on another of the old man's coughing fits, doubling him over, his hands on his knees. His whole body wrecked by the effort.
What was he saying there?
Nothing to signify. We're getting sort of cold standing here. If you don't want us, then that's fine. We'll be moving on.
Sure are fucking hasty, friends.
Come ahead. But just don't make any sudden movements to get us nervous.
They filed along the trail.
There was still no sign of the Watchers, but Ryan was aware of being checked out from both sides of the track. One thing that he noticed was the size of the trees. They had been among huge conifers and sequoias for some time, but there seemed to have been a quantum leap in the past half mile or so, from very big to gigantic. The others had also noticed the change.
Hot pipe! Trees and a half! Biggest I ever saw anywhere!
Mildred had crooked her arm through JB's elbow, and they were swinging along like a carefree pair of tourists. Ryan considered pointing out that they should all still be prepared for any danger, but there didn't seem to be an immediate threat, so he let it lie. Mildred glanced around at Ryan.
I think I came here when I was a little girl. Daddy had been murdered by the Klan 3 or 4 years earlier. His brother, Uncle Josh, brought me up here to Kings Canyon with his family, in a big Winnebago camper, as I recall. He told me that the trees reached up to heaven. I asked if I could climb up to the top and meet Daddy. He laughed and said that maybe I could, when I got a little older. Long time ago.
At that moment, the two sentries, who'd been keeping them invisible company, emerged from the trees. They wore a sort of uniform. Both were in matching white shirts and maroon jackets, with some kind of silver insignia, while one wore black pants and the other dark blue. They had heavy-duty boots and were bareheaded, hair neatly trimmed to their collars. Neither of them had any beard or mustache. Automatically, Ryan looked to see what kind of blasters they were carrying. The men, who looked to be in their late 20s, had belts with holstered pistols on them. But he couldn't make out what the pistols were, beyond the fact that they looked like revolvers rather than automatics. Each of the guards also had a long blaster slung across his shoulders.
Winchester 94s. Looks very much to me like the Magnum model. Hold 10 rounds of big 44s. Date from the late 1960s. Appear to be in good, clean condition.
The taller of the two guards nodded in a friendly manner.
Greetings from the Children of the Rock, brothers and sisters. You understand that we have to be a little suspicious about letting any strangers in here.
You sick, man?
No. Everyone takes a turn on all the duties. Tomorrow I might be in the kitchens. Not the way we run the Ville to have sick man, kid.
Don't call me kid. Got a name. Jack. Use that.
Sure thing. Jack it is. I'm Josiah Steele. Partner's called Jim Owsley.
The shorter of the pair nodded tersely, not speaking, his face showing little sign of welcome. Ryan noticed that Owsley had a poor complexion with weeping sores around the mouth.
You all got names?
Ryan Carter. This is Christy Roth. The young man's called Jack Lauren. This is my son, Dean. Fellow in the hat's J.B. Dix, and the lady's name is Mildred Wythe. And the old guy with the nasty cough's called Dr. Theophilus Tanner.
You're a real doctor? Don't get many of them around here these days.
I am indeed a real doctor, but not of the followers of Hippocrates. I am of the philosophical and scientific persuasion, my dear fellow, with degrees from some of the finest centers of learning in the known world, or the unknown world as well, of the heartland of Christendom and of all Jewry. Harvard and Oxford are among the several educational establishments that have been honored by my presence.
Shit. I don't understand but about one fucking word in 10 out of you.
Watch the language, Brother Jim. You know that Brother Joshua doesn't like profanity.
I know, damn it. An obscene word in the mouth of a profane man is as unpleasant as maggots in a fresh wound. Shit.
They were close enough now for Ryan to be able to make out the silver badge that both men wore on their chests. It was a cross, with another crooked cross laid over it. One that he knew was called a swastika, making it into a strange sort of a double cross. Ryan could also now make a reasonable guess at the revolvers in the matching holsters. They were unusual blasters. Very powerful Hawes Western Marshals, .357 caliber, single action, holding 6 rounds. Then the sun glinted off the brass grip frame, and he slightly changed his opinion. The revolvers were actually the Montana Marshall model. Owsley noticed Ryan staring at the weapons.
Seen enough, Outlander?
Yeah. Nice blasters. Look in real fine condition, too. Good to see weapons well cared for. Where'd y'all manage to find them?
Brother Joshua came across them in a hidden closet at the back of a burned-out blaster store, out beyond Muir Pass, years back. There were long blasters, as well as 2 dozen of those Hawes hand blasters.
Anything else?
We got a few blasters that we've sort of acquired over the years. A few self-mades and
patch-ups from the Mescalero.
The trail rose slowly over the next 100 yards, then reached a point where the massive trees had been cleared well back on both sides. Beyond the crest, the whole area opened out into a very large sunlit clearing, a good 300 yards across, roughly circular. Steele held his arms out wide to encompass the settlement of various timber buildings.
Welcome to Hopeville.